Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The South Dakota Symphony Orchestra is in concert this weekend in the Great Hall of the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. This morning, I sat down with Maestro Delta David Geyer, bassoonist Martin Kuskman, and composer Paul Moravec. Martin Kuskman is an Estonian-born bassoon virtuoso with two Grammy-nominated albums. His charismatic and commanding performances throughout the world have earned him repute as one of the leading solo instrumentalists today. He has premiered 11 bassoon concertos, all written and dedicated to him by some of the foremost composers of our time. He is a professor at the University of Denver Lamont School of Music. Paul Moravec is the recipient of the 2004 Pulitzer Prize in Music and the composer of numerous orchestral, chamber, choral, operatic, and lyric pieces. His music has earned many distinctions, including the Rome Prize Fellowship, a Guggenheim Fellowship, 3 awards from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Rockefeller Foundation. David, let's start with you because one of my favorite questions to ask you is sort of how you met the people in the room and managed to put together the program that we'll hear this weekend.
It's a sordid story, as usual. So with Paul, Paul and I met through his publisher, actually, Steve Culbertson, who lived a block away from me in Montclair, New Jersey. And one day, the day that I was coming to South Dakota to sign my contract as the new music director here, Steve pulls up at the curb outside of my house and he yells up to me, "Hey, David, guess what? One of my guys just won the Pulitzer." I'm like, "Oh, great. You know, congratulations." And he drives off and I get on the plane. And one of the issues that I had to solve was that when I came as a candidate here, I had this interview with the Argus Leader, which is the regional newspaper here. And we talked for like 90 minutes, this young woman and I, about lots of different things. But the title of the article on Thursday of that week was "Conductor Says Contemporary Music is Very Important." I thought, I'm dead. They'll never hire me. But they did. Yeah. So now I have a new problem. You know, how do I do this and still have a job after my first year?
How many years ago was that?
That was 14 years ago. Actually, that was 15 years ago. But so I'm on the plane and I'm thinking, a season of Pulitzer Prize winning composers. Mm. That way you don't have to take my word for it. No, it was kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval, but it also allowed me to structure an introduction to new music for an audience that was not accustomed to hearing it, and of the highest quality new music that I could find. Mm. And at that time, I mean, the landscape has changed so much in the last 15 years. Back then, orchestras were not playing contemporary music, hardly at all. And now everybody's playing contemporary music, literally everybody, not as much as they should, but it's a totally different game than it was. But I was really convinced that we needed to give the best quality that we could. And so I, in addition to putting a piece by a Pulitzer Prize winning composer on every concert, I invited the reigning Pulitzer Prize winner to Sioux Falls. Yeah. And Paul was the very first one that my first season. And we played his cello concerto, and welcome back, Paul, I should say.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
But Paul and I have had a relationship for many years now because of that.
And how did you meet Martin?
Martin and I met, again, rather unusual circumstances. We met in Thailand. So I'm conducting the Thailand Philharmonic in Mahler 7, which is a monster piece. Mm-hmm. But the Berlin Philharmonic wins. We're on tour in Asia. And particularly the oboist, Christoph Hartmann, has this relationship with the Thailand Philharmonic going way back because he's good friends with the former chief conductor. And so these guys that were on tour came and sat side by side with the Thailand Philharmonic for this performance of Mahler 7. And Martin was a bassoonist for that. So we...
Not with the Tallinn Philharmonic. I was touring with the Berlin
Philharmonic. Right. He was with the Berlin Philharmonic guys. So so he was sitting side by side and mentoring this rather youngish orchestra in Thailand. So we developed this relationship, and, you know, I don't know, over a beer or something or other, he said, hey, you know, Theofanides wrote me this concerto. We should play it together. So that's kind of how that happened.
Tell us about the music that we heard coming in, the composer's
Theofanides.
Name? Theofanides, thank you. Tell us a little bit about this piece, because that's what you're playing this weekend as well.
Yes. Chris is an old friend of mine. We went to Yale together, and he's now the composition professor at Yale University School of Music. And it's the very first concerto that was ever written for me back in 97, and then it was revisited in 2002. And to this date, I've played it at least 30 times, 30, 40 times around the globe. And it's proven to be very successful with the audiences worldwide. And I just told David yesterday that it's very difficult to play American music in Europe. For example, in Germany, it's just not programmed very much there. But Theofanides was very, very well received in Germany and Estonia and other places I've played it. So it's really a great, like a visiting card for me, although I have so many other fantastic concertos that I play as well. But this gets asked the most. Yeah. But, you know, it got nominated for Grammy a couple of years ago. And that, of course, helps. But it's just a really great champion of a piece for an instrumentalist, because it really explores every aspect, every possible aspect of the bassoon or an instrument, and without actually taking into account at all the instrument it was written for. It's just music. That just oozed out, and that's the way
I
like to.
What's the significance of that? Elaborate on that a little bit, because that feels significant that it was written without. Are there limitations normally that no longer exist? Does it break through expectations of what the bassoon or the musician can do?
To me, bassoon is just an expressive the tool that I express myself through, and. I don't like to set any kind of limits on myself or on the bassoon, for example, and with this concerto, with any concerto, this is the bottom note and this is the top note, and you know, maybe just certain restrictions of how fast you can move in certain register or something like that. I really mean the very top register. It gets a little bit awkward if moved very fast, but. Composers ask me, what would you like to do? What do you like to do? Can you play something? I don't know what I like to do. Tomorrow I may do something completely differently. And that's the beauty about working with composers, because you get into their, I want to hear what they want to say or what they hear in their head without actually getting into the nitty gritty of the technicalities of the instrument, because these can all be overcome. Just by being free and using your own air and voice and not getting bogged down with little things such as technique.
David, so many people have written specifically for Martin. Tell me, what is the significance of that for him? You know, for us as an audience member, when we look at that's special, that so many people would say, I'm going to write this, but I'm going to write it for this artist.
Well, music history is full of those kinds of examples. You think of a violinist like Joachim, who, you know, premiered the Brahms Concerto and so many others back in the 19th century. But, you know, you look for someone who has a limitless technique, basically, this guy. He's really a phenomenon, but also not limits in terms of expressivity. You know, it's... And I think it's kind of a composer's dream, in a way. I mean, a composer, Paul, can speak up on this, too, that, you know, you have to get to know the instrument very, very well. And then you have to get to know the person you're writing for very, very well. I think of Jennifer Higdon, who we played her violin concerto here a few years ago, and she was writing for Hilary Hahn, arguably one of the greatest violinists living today. And Hilary was a student of hers at Curtis Institute, and Hilary kept saying when Jennifer would show her parts of it, it's not hard enough. Give me something more. It's not difficult enough. It's like, what? So I'm going to change these parallel octaves to parallel major sevenths. You know, it's like, it's just ridiculous what Hilary can do. And how inspiring is that?
Right.
And in Jennifer's case, she won the Pulitzer Prize for that piece. And I think that she won it because she had a muse to write for. I mean, I think it's the best piece of hers I've ever heard. And it has heart to it because it reflects the relationship she has with this person.
Martin, what is that relationship like between you and the composers? Does it feel like a symbiotic thing?
I'm a people's person. I like communicating, and I never have trouble with it. And so the composers that I've worked with, yes, I know them all quite well, and we hang out. We it's not like we don't even have to necessarily know each other from before, but once the relationship starts, it's we become friends, and we talk, we joke, and it's becoming them writing a piece for me as a person. Yes, and ultimately, as David says, it plays a big role. Writing for a person, but after that, it's still their music, and with the affinities too. I had to tell Chris that this is it's not enough notes. that it needs to be enhanced. That give me something really, really to push through.
Right.
And I like that aspect of music, the challenge, the sort of Formula One race with absolute walk in the park lyricism as well, but you ultimately ask people whose music you like, and whose music you know, and that's when the great performances will come about.
Paul, I want to bring you into the conversation from a composer's perspective. What is that to sort of have a relationship with the conductor, the individual musician?
Yes. It's always so great to write for your friends. It's very important, and it's about the personal relationship. It's not just knowing intimately your friend's technical abilities on the instruments or as singers, whatever they do. It's also knowing their personalities, what they and you end up writing for them as though you're casting a play before you write the play.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we've been talking about, I think the analogy in the film world, for example, might have more resonance for your listeners. For example, Martin Scorsese is a great director with his great catalog of works, in part because he was always directing Robert De Niro. He had this fantastic, lifelong relationship and friendship with this guy who brought out the best in him and in each other. And so the same thing happens with musicians, composers writing for performers, and so on. When you're writing for people that you care about, that you love, and so on, they love you, and it's a big love boat, everybody wins, what's not to like, so.
This weekend, the Overlook Hotel Suite.
Yes.
And this has a connection to Stephen King and
yes.
The Shining. Oh,
yes.
Oh boy.
Yes.
All right, explain that for us, please.
Well, I wrote an opera based on the Stephen King novel, The Shining, as distinct from the movie, the famous Kubrick movie, which I admire, but that's not what we based it on. We went to the source. And it premiered at Minnesota Opera in May of 2016, so just about 2 years ago. If I do say so, it was a tremendous success. It might be the most successful thing they ever did in their 55-year history you know, Tosca, Carmen, you name it. I mean, this is the biggest thing.
Sold out.
People were scalping tickets on eBay. I mean, when does this ever happen with an opera? You know, I mean, it was amazing. And Minnesota Opera, I can't say enough about them. It's just a fantastic, it's one of the great opera companies in the country and in the world, and they keep getting stronger and better, and it's really an amazing company. Anyways, the American Composers Orchestra in New York commissioned me to make an orchestral suite out of The Shining, you know, the sort of action music and so on, and mostly that's what it is. And so I did that, and that premiered at Carnegie Hall in December of 2016 in a chamber orchestra version. And so David said, look, why don't you make a big full orchestral version? Let it, you know, let it fulfill its potential, so to speak. So this will, and actually I rewrote it. I mean, I reorganized it. I found out where the weak spots were in the premiere, and I said, okay, now I know what to do. And so this is the world premiere of the full orchestral version of the Overlook Hotel Suite. Hmm. Get it? It's a hotel suite. It's
yes.
Okay, all right.
What's the number on the door?
The number, well, in the movie, the number is 237. In the book, it's 217. That's the scary room, you know, where Danny's not supposed to go in. You know.
We are going to leave listeners today with a little bit from a different piece of yours. Would you like to set this up about the Blizzard Voices?
Yeah, this is a piece that's actually about this area, sort of. I mean, it there was a once in a millennium blizzard, a superstorm, we would call it today, that struck the Great Plains on, I think it was January 12th, 1888, and it lasted about half a day, and it killed hundreds, possibly thousands of people. We don't know because most of the people were pioneers. The records weren't kept very well, and it was you know, a storm of such biblical ferocity I think it's still indelibly you know, etched into the sort of collective memory of people who had family, you know, back then. And it's also called the children's blizzard because it killed so many children who happened to be on their way home from school and they weren't dressed properly, you know, because it was a warm day. And it was just, you know, a terrible tragedy. Anyways, Ted Kooser, who is from Nebraska, he's sort of the poet laureate of Nebraska, sort of great guy, great poet. He collected the firsthand accounts of the survivors of this blizzard, this catastrophe, and he published a book called The Blizzard Voices, which is partly his elaboration on it and partly actual accounts. And so I took his libretto and made a sort of Old Testament Handelian oratorio out of it, and it's called The Blizzard Voices, and that's what it is.
All right, and we will...
I should mention this was commissioned by Opera Omaha, so it premiered in Omaha in about 10 years ago. So.
We'll leave you with that in just a minute. The South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performs this Saturday, April 7th. That's at 7:30 p.m. See them at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. A Martin will play, and we'll hear music from Paul and
Tchaikovsky
as well. You can't lose with this ticket. So thank you all for being here. And before we let you go, the SDPB member drive is happening right now, and for the next two callers who give at the $100 level, we have a special gift for you. Two tickets for this weekend's South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performance. Call 800-333-0789 now. Give at the $100 level, and two tickets to this weekend's concert are yours to enjoy. Thank you.